Wellington-based writer David Cohen also uses the written word, and creative writing helps him deal with one of the biggest issues in his life. David and his wife Pamela's son Elliot was 3 years old when they learned he was autistic. Frustrated at a lack of good information, David turned to his skills as a journalist, travelling the world to gather information he published in his book, A Perfect World, A Father's Quest to Unriddle the Mysteries of Autism. He told us about his experiences since then, understanding autism and how it would change his family's life.
Autism is a profound developmental disorder affecting language, behaviour and empathy or social skills. That's the way it was originally described by Leo Kanner 60 years ago, and the definition still holds. Since 1991, autism has been recognised as a spectrum of disorders. Within that spectrum, we have this concept of Asperger syndrome, which, you know, we hear a lot about these days, which is a mild form of autism. In any event, that's the condition, or the malady, by definition. Because it is a developmental disorder, it tends to be diagnosed around age 2 or 3.
At the age of 3, your son Elliot was diagnosed as being autistic. What were the signs then for you that there might have been something going on?
He was diagnosed around, I think, age 2.5 from memory, or a little bit before his 3rd birthday. I mean, there were a variety of indicators that all was not well. His behaviour was erratic, putting it mildly. He was prone to severe temper outbursts. His language was regressing. He had picked up only a few dozen words by that point in his life, and those words were disappearing fast. His sleeping patterns, his behavioural patterns, were very strange. Yeah, his behaviour was becoming increasingly weird. I mentioned Leo Kanner before. This is the physician who first described autism. And the word autism comes from the Greek, autos, it means alone. And Leo Kanner spent 5 years looking at 11 children at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. These children, he said, were possessed with an aloneness from the beginning of life. For that idea, he came up with the word autism. In our case, with Elliot, this aloneness fact is a big part of it too. There's something unknowable, particularly unknowable. I mean, everybody is, to some extent, is impossible to know. But with these autistic youngsters, there is this profound distance.
At the point that Elliot was diagnosed, did you have any idea what that was going to mean for you as a family and for you as parents in the caring role?
No. Like a lot of people, maybe it's human nature, when a disorder looms over the horizon, we tend to shop around for diagnoses, and we start with the most appealing one, you know, first. If we've got a sniffle, we don't automatically assume that we have pneumonia. Look at a cold and then the flu and so on and so forth. It's the same with autism. So that even the word we avoided for some substantial time. Did we know what was in store? No. However, I put this is going to sound like a terrible cliche, but it's been a wild career, learning roller coaster from there on in.
Most caring involves sort of rearranging a life, but from reading what you've written in the book, A Perfect World, I mean, it sounds like it's a almost hour by hour, particularly intense experience.
Yeah, well, Elliot is now age 9.5. And one of the things shortly after his diagnosis that we sought for him was some sort of intensive intervention therapy. Opinions, scientific opinions, about various therapies wax and wane, but all specialists agree that the most important thing you can do after diagnosis is to institute some form of intensive intervention therapy if these children are to have any advantage in their lives whatsoever. So the first couple of years, our house turned into a bit of a school. We had between 20 and 30 hours of therapeutic intervention for Elliot, people coming in, and we chose a form of a therapy known as applied behavioural analysis, which is certainly not a holy grail, and I'm aware of the criticisms that have been made about it. However, we chose it. For 2 years, we probably spent around $1,000 a week, $800 to $1,000 a week on this therapy. So that certainly changed our life. You know, I'm a journalist. We're very poor people. So budgetary. It was like we were sending our child to Harvard University at the age of three. We were paying the same amount of fees.
You travelled and researched extensively in writing the book, and from that it seems that New Zealand perhaps doesn't really provide much in the way of support for autism compared to other countries.
It does better than a few, but as far as Western jurisdictions go, not many. I think it's astounding, and it astounded me, to visit Israel. Now, irrespective of one's views on the various Israeli situations, it is a country that exists in a rather extraordinary security setting. And it's a country collectively that has an awful lot on its mind. Somehow, Israel is able to arrange its affairs in respect of autistic children a hell of a lot better than somewhere like New Zealand. For instance, the government of Israel gives parents a basket of support assistance that comes to about 2,000 New Zealand dollars a month. If I were living in Israel, the government provides 40 nights of respite care in some pretty high-class residences, places I would be very happy to live. Now, as a New Zealander, I found it challenging and disheartening, wondering why a place like that can achieve so much more than New Zealand, which has no profound security needs, which is in many respects a wealthier country.
Is it something that's never made it onto our list of things to do in the health sector, or has it been looked at and for some reason discarded?
I think New Zealand is a very good place to break a leg or to get a black eye. Any run-of-the-mill ailment or malady, you will be treated as well here as anywhere on earth. But once it starts to get a little subtle, a little complicated, and autism is surely that, all bets are off. This is not a nation of specialists. And autism is something which requires specialised attention and specialised knowledge. So right from get-go, this is a poor place. Now, at the policy level, when it comes to funding decisions, same deal applies. So we will get progress once we have a sufficient number of cabinet ministers with autistic children.
So you've been fortunate to be able to afford, you know, to provide a lot of therapy for Elliot. In other families that you met, how do people cope who really have to depend on what the system can offer them?
Well, they don't cope. And I mean, I would say, you know, and I'm very middle class, I'm happily middle class. We didn't cope, and I'm still digging out of that particular hole. I don't say that self-piteously, but just for the record. So how someone who is not middle class copes with autism in the household, God only knows, I don't. And that's another point about New Zealand. You know, we've never done any serious research. We don't know how many Maori families or Pacific Island families or Asian families. We don't know what the incidence and the prevalence is. We don't know what their situations are. For what it's worth, my wife and I, particularly my wife, have established a few things, like a holiday program in Wellington, which runs every school holiday, in which any parent with an autistic offspring can bring the kid along for a day, for half a day or a full day. So the short answer is, I don't know how everybody else copes, but I've tried to, in some small way, to make a little easier for some of those people at least.
And 6 years on from his diagnosis, how has Elliot progressed? And as a parent carer, how does the future look for you and what that will mean in coming years?
You're progressed is a difficult concept because autism is not like, say, influenza. It's not something that can be cured, and it's actually probably a mistake to even think that it should be cured. It is simply a different disposition. It would be rather like somebody being born with slightly different joints or limbs. So given that there is no cure, given that a cure is not desirable, probably, the question of progress is it's hard to really quantify. Like any parent, I want my children to be happy. I hope Elliot is relatively happy. I think the question of progress can almost be turned on its head. It's more like how much have I progressed? And in the 6 years or so since Elliot was diagnosed, I've actually astoundingly come to really appreciate and value aspects of his reality and to even see them as a kind of blessing in my life. You know, autists are not malevolent. That's a very enriching experience, an unusual experience for a parent to enjoy. Autists are enigmatic. You know, I have certain intellectual pretensions, and I have found a certain fascination in his condition. I mean, I wrote a book about it. And autists are also often extremely good-looking. This is why Leo Kanner, again, back in 1943, was convinced that it was a middle-class malady, because all these children were sort of angelic-looking, but they had this sort of fearful disorder on the inside. I guess what I'm saying in a long-winded fashion is that on a good day, autism has its own rewards, and over the past 6 years, I've come to appreciate that. So I would, answering your question, I would say the progress has been pretty good on my part.
As Elliot sort of grows up, does the role as a carer for you remain as intense, or do they become more independent as they, you know, get closer to adulthood?
Elliot is what we would call a core autist. That is, he's profoundly autistic. He is severely autistic. He's not Asperger syndrome. You know, he still has no language. He can certainly communicate his wants and his needs in a crude fashion, but he can't articulate that. You know, his behaviour is as peculiar as ever. He will never lead an independent life. He will always need some sort of hopefully community-based residential support. Again, there are benefits of knowing that with a child. Yes, he will always need support, but at least we know pretty early on that that's going to be the case. But exactly where and how it's going to happen, that's still shaking down.
And do you have any feeling that the sort of support that, you know, that the public system provides for carers of someone who is autistic will get better or is getting better, or that it's coming more on the radar?
I think autism is... people are more familiar with the word. I would wager that 15 years ago, most listeners would not have heard the word autism. Certainly I hadn't. So as it become, you know, it's a very mediagenic condition, because you've got a lot of angry, articulate, if not eloquent, highly motivated parents making a lot of noise. And you've also got people in the media who have been affected. So sort of a momentum has been created, and the way these things go, this somewhere down the track tends to be reflected at a policy level. If that model holds, then things, as far as government provision or tax-funded provision, should get better. I'm actually not in the market for endless handouts from the taxpayer, but I do think that there should be, at the policy level, I think there should be tax breaks for parents and caregivers who assume the role of the state in the area of health and education of their child. At the very least, that money should be a tax deductible. I think that would be a good place to start.